Welcome to Money Matters with certified financial planner Dave Petzo. Dave answers your questions about personal finance. He provides insight into making the most on your money using over 20 years of experience. Money Matters is brought to you in part by Petzo Financial Consultants and Mountain West Bank, Idaho's community bank, with offices in Boise, Ketchum, and Coeur d'Alene. Dave Petzo, the host of Money Matters, is a certified financial planner professional. And now the host of Money Matters, Dave Petzo.
And 580 KIDO, our great friend Dave Petzo with us. Dave, good to have you with us.
It's always good to be here with you, Kevin.
All right. What's going on with Brexit and how does it impact us in Idaho?
What's Brexit?
Yeah, I know. No one's talking about Brexit.
No, I haven't heard a word.
Which is fascinating because, you know, the idea of England leaving the European Union, not a lot of people buzzing about it, but the world is ending. I'm sure you're going to reassure us.
Yes and no. Okay. But the answer is, everybody knows what Brexit is now, right? I mean, it's Britain leaving, wants to leave the European Union. So let me talk about a couple of things that I think, to put it in the right context, that you don't hear a lot of people talking about, and it doesn't make me right. I think the first thing we have to understand about Brexit is that this was not expected, completely unexpected. And when you have trillions of dollars that are positioned a certain way.
Okay.
And then you are wrong. You are going to have massive dislocations in the market. Because this was not like a little more than half the people thought a certain way. This is what everybody thought. And so now you have literally trillions of dollars as mispositioned. And when you have that, it is going to be a dislocation. It doesn't mean it's the end of the world. It doesn't mean that that Britain's going to have a recession. All of that stuff, we'll have to wait and see. You can define that later. But what we need to understand is that the initial reaction of the market is, oh my gosh, this is wrong. We had all this money over here. Well, now we have to move it.
So why are people getting so upset about this? You had Hillary Clinton going, Donald Trump, he was happy that 3% of Americans lost 3% of their value. What was the reaction? It was like the markets went down. People lost, according to Hillary Clinton, value in their 401ks, their IRAs. How does that happen that Britain decides to leave the EU, which hasn't happened yet,
right?
And the markets react volatilely that, what is it, $1 billion or $1 trillion is lost?
Yeah, we were...
You would know the details. I'm the master of hyperbole here.
Yeah. I call it a trillion. Who cares?
Okay.
Nobody ever really asks or counts. It doesn't make it. You know, I think it was a gazillion dollars. That's what it really was.
Roger.
Okay? So we all lost gazillions of dollars. Because the markets never bounce back. And the markets never go down for any other reason except Donald Trump is happy about this. Of course, that's absurd. It's what markets do, but when the market, where is the market now? Kevin, it's where it was 10 days ago. I mean, that's when people are like, okay, so the market rallied expecting a certain outcome. It didn't happen. We need to undo that. The market did it. That's what markets do in a very fast way. Boom. It's done. 2 days later, it's done. Market actually rallied yesterday. That doesn't mean it's all happy days are here again and the Brexit is irrelevant. It's relevant. But it's relevant to Britain, not to Idaho, not to the United States. It's relevant to them. And people say, well, now the whole European Union is going to come crashing down. We don't even know what's going to happen yet. So the people that sit around and make these predictions, well, they don't have any idea. And it's just great. They sound smart. I know that this is going to happen. Then Scotland's going to leave. And then these guys are going to leave. And these guys. First of all, I don't think anybody anywhere near Russia is going to leave. They kind of like the security of that. Remember Crimea? I mean, it's just maybe we are remembering that they just roll tanks across the border and go, you know, I think we'll take them back. These were Soviet satellites. They want to be connected with the European Union. And further, we don't have any idea what Britain's going to do. Are they going to fully leave? Doubt it. Are they going to, or are they going to be more like, say, Switzerland?
But
Switzerland's not in either.
Why do the markets react that way to cause a panic? And again, you have people that are casual folks that are, you know, they want to go to McCall or Donnelly or maybe Coeur d'Alene or to Reno. And all of a sudden, their vacations are jarred loose
mm-hmm.
because of this. they get on the phone with their financial planners or they go online and it's...
It is, but that's, again, because we have $1 trillion to pick a number, mispositioned wrong, and it has to be adjusted the other direction. It's not because it's a disaster. It's because it was mispositioned.
Right, and I'm with you. And this is something that you talk about at Petso Financial, Petso Center. It's perceived as a disaster.
Correct.
And then you have the press playing on this. Like the New York Times did this big story where it's an uncertain world. Britain has been a dominant power long before it's, 17 or 23 years in the European Union.
Yeah, yeah, it is. Number one. Number two, they're not going to be out of the European Union, Kevin. They're not. They're just tired of having... Look, let's think of it this way. Would you be happy if Ottawa, Canada told us how many people had to immigrate to the United States? Of course not. Would you be happy in Britain if the President of the United States showed up and said, well, we're going to put you in the back of the queue if you don't stay in the European Union. We would not be happy about that either. We want our independence. This is a cry of independence. It's a wonderful, powerful thing. And it also, in my opinion, is a very positive thing long term. Bureaucrats in other places determining what is best for you in your life is exactly what people are saying in this country right now. I don't want any of that, and that's BS, and I want out of here. I don't want this nonsense. Otherwise, we wouldn't go for a blowhard like Donald Trump. He's turning it upside down because everybody is sick and tired of people saying that they're smarter than I am, and so I know what's best for you. And they're doing that in Europe, too. They're doing it in England. A bunch of bureaucrats in Brussels do not determine how the Brits are going to be. Now, is this the end of the world or end of Britain? You've brought up a great point. They are a very powerful economic force. And as everybody talks about, well, I don't know about all these trade deals. I don't know how they're going to get all these trade deals. Let me tell you this. They have a trade deficit. You know what that means? That means they buy more stuff from other people than they sell to them. So do you think that Mercedes-Benz and BMW and all these other companies are going to be putting pressure on the Germans to cut a deal? Of course they are.
Well, then let me hit you with this, because now you hear the rumors that 14 other countries are saying, you know, maybe this thing ain't working out. And you remember, you're an old timer, and I'm...
I just had a birthday. That's a little sensitive, Kevin.
How old?
5'5".
You look younger than I am. You look 4 or 5.
I've always looked younger than you.
Yes, exactly. And I don't have a problem saying that, yes, and agreeing with you. However, you remember when the EU came out and it was going to be the end of the United States of America.
Right.
That hasn't panned out. And now with other countries threatening to leave, what's the impact on 401ks and IRAs here in the Treasure Valley?
Right. It's temporary, in my opinion, and then we'll go on to another crisis. This was just a retraction of what had of the rally that we had since February leading into Brexit, because it was supposed to, right? We had only a 10% chance that they would leave. Well, that didn't turn out that way. And so this absolute certainty of a bet, if you will, turned out not to be. And everybody had their money positioned as if they would remain. They did not. They're leaving. And we'll see if they leave. We don't know that they're going to leave. So what does it have to do with the 401k? I believe it has very little to do with it.
But the press reports are going on and on about people losing value. You have Hillary
Correct.
Clinton doing her very best to take advantage of this.
Well, two things with that, Kevin. One, the press is what they did. It's what they do. They have to hyperventilate about everything. They do. It's not that there's news every day. There isn't. You know, hey, the sun came up today and it's going to go down tonight. Thanks for joining us. They have to hyperventilate about everything. Now, Kevin, picture this. You're like a financial reporter and the market opens down 50 points. Do you know what they automatically do? They look around the room and they go, wow, I wonder, is it oil? Is it interest rates? The Federal Reserve burp. I mean, what? Wow. Oh, there it is, right there. We heard a Fed governor spoke over here. That must be it. Interest rates concerns. Boom. That's it. And they tag it as if that was the reason the market went down 50 points.
Well, what is the reason?
It could be anything. It could be hedge funds trading, repositioning. And what I'm trying to say with this is that the hedge funds, the pensions, you and I were positioned incorrectly with trillions of dollars. And they voted the other way. Now, I'm not going to say that this was a 9/11 type event in that we're going to shut down the economy and things like that. But it is in the sense that it was completely unexpected. And we now need to reposition. That is what markets do very efficiently and very scary, because the markets move like that. And then now they're done. Now, so we've repositioned. So the question going forward is, does Britain remain? I think so. In some sense, maybe they remain fully. Maybe they negotiate something with the. But all kinds of countries there have a different deal. It's not exactly like you are fully in or you're fully out. As Switzerland and Norway, they have completely separate deals. And so does Britain. They all have their own currency, as an example.
All right. Our great friend Dave Petzo with us here at 580KIDO, giving us something to talk about in the doldrum days of summer. Now, I think one of the best things I ever did very early on in our tenure here was I gave you a book. I think I gave you like three or four books for some reason. Two books.
Moneyball
Money
was
Ball.
The other one.
Yeah, Moneyball and The Big Short.
And The Big Short.
Now, the thing that that got me is I gave you this book because I read the excerpt, and I read Moneyball, and I read the excerpt of The Big Short, and Michael Lewis is just a genius. So while in D.C., on the plane, I'm watching the movie The Big Short, and it's changed my life. And I'm listening to the audiobook, and I'm going to read the book. I highly recommend that you go out and take a look at this, because you'll never look at finance the same way again. As someone who read the book, who hasn't seen the movie yet, but the idea of the mortgages, the subprime, the tranchants, the AAA, the AA bonding, and essentially it was this giant fraud where you would have these bad loans lumped in together and they would be purchased, and the worst of the worst would be put into these other things. And it's just amazing how Michael Lewis breaks this down. So where are we as far as mortgages and securities and home loans? You've been very adamant with saying, Kevin, we don't give home loans to the migrant worker that makes 14 grand a year a loan for a $700,000 house anymore.
Right.
That's how crazy it was.
It was. And the liar loans, the non-documentation, burying in their
non-docs,
loans.
Non-docs, yeah.
Yeah. All those things. And no, we don't. And so that whole world has changed. The whole world has changed in that. So that was, and Kevin, it's more complicated than I'm going to say, but all of this was enabled by Fannie and Freddie. So D.C. doing this and forcing the banks to loan to people that were not going to pay back their loans, but then allowing the government to guarantee those loans, right? And so Fannie and Freddie, so they could package them, call them AAA. So you're right, it was fraudulent from the bankers that did this, in the sense that they were putting crappy loans in there. But the government was saying, yes, we want you to package these crappy loans and put them in Fannie and Freddie. And even when people were trying, screaming and yelling, we've got to reform this, you had Maxine Waters and all the others, right, that were standing up and screaming and yelling, not over my dead body.
Right, but the people that were rating it, the Moody's and everything else, didn't know what they were doing.
No.
The FEC was not looking at any of this. No one was watching the house.
No, they weren't. But or the documentation of it, except for, of course, these geniuses that started breaking down the loans and said, these things are going to blow up. Okay, but if you are sitting in Norway as an example, and you're thinking of investing in one of these pieces of paper, and the government guarantees it, and so it's a AAA, that's the decision you make. You don't look any further. So the government guarantee is what made these things AAA.
Right, and then you had someone else who was supposedly in charge of these things. It is crazy. More coming up with Dave Petzo. So would you recommend people? Probably nobody reads anymore, but give me your book report on The Big Short.
Yeah, no, it's fascinating, and I think it's written in a way that you can understand it if you're not in finance. Okay, is that fair to say that, Kevin?
I would say, and like I said, it's just an amazing thing. More coming up with the amazing Dave Petzo, Kevin Miller on Idaho's Talk Station 580KIDO.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's Talk Station 580 KITO.
I really wanted to stop using drugs.
I kept trying to quit,
but it was just a matter of time before I'd be loaded again.
I felt like a hopeless, useless failure.
And then I picked up the phone.
Narcotics Anonymous. To find a meeting near you, log on to NA.org.
I was at the end of the road.
You know, where I couldn't keep living with drugs.
And thought I couldn't live without them.
Then I found NA.
More furniture.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
And Kevin Miller here, our great friend Dave Petzo with us. Phone number is 580-5436. 580-KITO. Let's talk a little money news. So Brexit is the big deal. It's just amazing how intertwined our worlds are. So over the summer, any big news that we should look forward to?
No, the big news is always the stuff like that, right, where the building is hit out of the blue, where Brexit goes the wrong direction, according to the markets, at least how the money was positioned. So all those things are what really rocks the market in a temporary way. But again, it's temporary, and I think that's the thing that people have to recognize, that these are, you know, this is a temporary hit. What changed? How does this change Procter & Gamble's ability to sell Tide and diapers around the world? It doesn't. How does this change the number of Budweisers drank and so on and so forth? It just doesn't. And although people act like the stock market is some kind of an animal unto itself, we have to be reminded sometimes that this is just a place, a mechanism where we can buy and sell pieces of a real business that generates real profits and grows or shrinks, disappears. New ones come. And so, it's the creative destruction that capitalism is, and it's the mechanism we can most readily identify with that and easily understand. But we think of it as a separate animal. And when we're thinking about buying businesses, nobody goes, oh, my gosh, you know, I can't believe I opened up this restaurant and Brexit happened. I probably better sell or shut down. I mean, nobody thinks that way about a real business.
Speaking of real businesses, because we have more business owners that listen to this show than anybody else in the Treasure Valley, what do you say to your fellow small business owners right now?
About Brexit or anything else?
About just the cost of doing business. I was hanging out with some folks, and they go, you know, Kevin, our busy time is the spring, so we always wait until the second, third, or fourth quarter to do our taxes. What's the state of small business right now?
Well, it's good in the valley here. It's great in the valley here.
For now.
But obviously, it's tough, Kevin. It's tough to be a business person. It always sounds like a great idea. You know, I'm the captain of my own schedule, right? Which also means that you get to work more hours than somebody else, and when things go wrong, it's always on you, even if it is somebody that works for you. You have to answer for all of that because you hire all of the people. I mean, we had a virtual software disaster for the last several months at our office, right? Well, we can't do the software. There's nothing we can do about the software. But we are the ones that take the hit for having the reputation, theoretically, prior, that we were, you know, really on top of things. And now we look like we're not so on top of things because of something that's completely out of our control. That's an example of what happens in everyday business for people. It's out of your control, but you are the one that has to take it. So you work more hours, and if something's not getting done, you have to go and pick up the broom, mop, or whatever, plunge out the toilet. All of those things are part of your job description, even though it sounds like a great idea. And then you throw on top of that the fact that the small business person has to pay both sides of payroll taxes. It's pretty expensive to be. The tax rate's very, very high for small business. It's actually, if you're a successful small business person, your tax rate is well over 50%. That's extraordinary, and people don't really realize that because there's very few employed people that come anywhere near that number.
And we move along. Our great friend Dave Petzo with us. Kevin Miller in the morning on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KITO. What do you make of Tesla?
That's an interesting question. How about sometimes people can develop, they can always pull back from it, a little bit of a God complex. That's what I really think about this deal. He can get away with anything because everybody loves him. And this is so This makes no sense. I don't know to anybody that it makes sense. Certainly, analysts are befuddled how a solar company looks anything like a car company. So, to me, it's just it's absurd, and it's bailing out stockholders of SolarCity because SolarCity is sinking fast into the sea, and so we're going to bail it out by buying it out. And that just seems crazy and very self-serving. I don't like it at all.
But you go to Nevada,
mm-hmm.
and you can see the Tesla influence. You can see the Tesla footprint, even at gas stations now with the plug-ins. You go to the Meadowbrook Mall in Reno, and you have plug-ins now for electric cars.
Mm-hmm.
You take a look at what Tesla is doing, and he and Warren Buffett are going toe-to-toe in Nevada over solar power and the grid and everything else. And I know Musk wants to go to the moon and all that, or Mars or what have you. But back to this energy thing, is he on to something?
With the solar?
With the solar.
He owns them both. I mean, or he's the biggest stockholder in both.
But the solar and the cars. They're really pumped up about this Tesla plant coming in.
Oh, yeah.
For people that aren't familiar with it, Elon Musk got into a little trouble with Warren Buffett because too many people were going off the grid with the solar power and the subsidies and everything else. So even though if you get solar power, you still have to pay into the electric bill to build up the grid. Now, if you go to Reno or probably Vegas, you're going to see fueling stations for Tesla cars.
Yeah.
Now, we haven't seen anything like this since Tucker. The Tucker cars, by the way, Museum of American History, a huge exhibit to the Tucker automobile. We have those photos for you at 580kido.com. So back to Elon Musk. Is he on to something with this pursuit of the Tesla car and the solar power?
Both are separate entities. Both, if they did not have tons of government money, would not exist. I don't think that's a great business model.
How do I get some government money?
Exactly. You have to be Elon Musk. So you have to be a beloved entrepreneur.
A beloved lib.
Yes. And if you're not, then you can't get the government money, and then it doesn't work. but I'm serious. This is SolarCity would not exist without all of the government subsidies. And I think everybody knows that a ridiculous amount of every Tesla car is government rebates and credits. So that come back. So neither are at all self-sustaining. Both need tons. I mean, literally billions and billions more money raised to survive. So.
But is he on to something?
If you have that kind of a blank check written by the government, I guess he is.
Could you imagine in the next 20 years not paying an electric bill? You pay to pay off your solar power stuff.
Right. Oh, no. I think it absolutely. But it's not like he invented solar power. It's not. I mean, there's lots of solar companies that have come and gone, as we well know.
There's tons of people in Idaho buying solar panels right now.
Exactly. There's a huge plant out in Kuna. I just saw it the other day. Have you been out and seen that?
You went past 10 Mile?
Hey, I know.
You got out into the hinterlands?
Well, I had a GPS, so I felt safe. And
that's good.
Middle of the day, I felt it was okay.
You had your backup compass?
And a blanket.
Yeah. Dave Fetzel, finally, what should we be looking out for?
Hey, obviously this Brexit thing is going to continue to be in the news, and it's going to be big. And also, I just want to mention this, too. It doesn't fit. So when we hear all the media talking about how big a disaster this is, think of the media source. Because the reality is that the liberals think that this is really super bad because you might not have bigger government determining what people are doing. This is a question of freedom to the Brits. It's not a question of just economics. And so when this doesn't fit the vernacular, then you're going to hear the media scream and yell and fine people that think this is the worst thing that ever happened. So just relax. Let's let this thing play out. We don't even know if they're actually going to leave. And my best guess is that they're not going to fully leave if they leave at all. And that is they'll have a deal, something like Switzerland and others, where all the trade will continue to be done. They just won't have any say in what's going on in Brussels.
Dave Petzo, we always appreciate it. Petzo Center, Petzo Financial, Petzo on Facebook, Twitter, and worldwide. Thank you, sir.
We appreciate you, Kevin. Thanks.
You're listening to Kevin Miller on Idaho's Talk Station 580.
This is Money Matters. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello, good morning, and thank you for joining us. Hey, if you'd like to join us on the phone, of course, 580-5436, 580-KITO. You know, what an amazing week of news, if you will. I mean, with Brexit and all of the doom and gloom. And I don't just want to talk about how wrong that is. I want to, I guess, think about it in the standpoint of how do we take in and decipher and what is going on. Because that was news, right? It's not, that wasn't noise. That was real news. That was important. We were shocked. But what we end up with when that happens is if you can imagine that we're in the, you know, newsroom, and even better, we're on the floor of the exchange or whatever. We're sitting there telling people what's going on. Why are stocks doing what they're doing? And this happens every day, not just during this. So, well, why are stocks down? Brexit. Okay. Now follow what I'm saying here. Most days, we get this. It's all about oil. Oil prices up this morning, so the market went up. Oil down, the market went down. Interest rates, Fed governor, and jobs report of some kind. In other words, we sit in the middle of the room, and the market moves, maybe even a tiny bit, and the news folks feel compelled to tell us why. Why did that happen? And they search around the room for the reason, for a reason, any reason to tag it to. It's not the reason, just a reason. And you see, it gives us this impression that things aren't ever really in control, right? I mean, it doesn't really matter that businesses are operating more profitably, that profits and dividends and cash flows are growing, balance sheets are stronger. Perhaps there's mergers and acquisitions going on. And, yeah, earnings are coming down a little bit. They have been for the last couple of years. Get all that. I'm just talking on a normal, if you will, long-term, multi-year basis. This is the fact for our life, our parents' lives and our grandparents' lives. This is what's happened. The world has grown. The economy of the world has grown. The corporations of the world have grown. Period. But when we get caught in this silliness of running around and deciding why something happened, a bullet point grasping at it, we miss. It's not only incorrect, we think that this is just some random thing. It's not that the overall trajectory continues to go up, because the overall trajectory of the world is up. We lose sight of it as just like, well, this person said this, this person said that, so on and so forth. It's crazy, absolutely crazy. And we have to be careful with the thinking that we're getting information that is important to our portfolios when we have a tendency just to overreact terribly. So when we take this and we look at the Brexit, and we simply say, what happened? We had a shocking outcome to a foregone conclusion that was not foregone. It was shocking. It was certainly not a 9/11 event in any kind of a sense that it had anywhere near the severity of that. But the sudden and shocking nature of it is the same. Markets were not positioned for that. So when we hear people telling you, after the fact, of anything in the markets, they know nothing. They don't know what's going to happen. And many times it's not the reason why. So we hear people constantly, constant chatter about how this was a disaster of global contagion. And at the epicenter of it is Britain, certain to teeter into a recession. Absolutely certain. We know that's going to happen. Do we? What the heck? Half the world is already there. That's a big proclamation. But there's nobody saying, oh, I don't think that's true. Because it's a lot easier to be wrong if you are negative. It just, because you are. You're wrong. You just walk around, nah, this won't work, that won't work. Sky is falling, the sky is falling, the sky is falling. And it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter that the doomsdayers are always wrong. It makes no difference. As long as you're negative, being right is unimportant. It's just unimportant. So when we hear that, those voices are kind of lost out there. And when we hear about this, you also have to understand this simple fact. This does not fit the narrative of a one-world order. This is horrible news to socialism. Experiment. Part 199. No, it's never worked anywhere in the world, but we'll get it this time. I even heard somebody talking about the fact that all the really smart people didn't vote for them to leave. You know, kind of like the Donald Trump thing. Really, not very smart people vote for Donald Trump. Intelligent people vote for the criminal. I mean, that was really the point of discussion. I'm like, wow. Because it doesn't fit the narrative. That people want to be free. That the bureaucrats don't know. They don't know the best answer. So as we look at this and we think about it economically, you're hearing the overlay of so much political opinion. So much. So real quick before we go to this phone call, what really happened? What happened? We got shocked, okay, and trillions of dollars were mispositioned, trillions. And it had to be unwound fast, and it took it 2 full days. And more than 10% in some markets around the world. Huge repositioning of trillions of dollars because it was shockingly wrong. And then it was done. And then it was done. Thanks for watching. We don't have to have a political argument about one world order being better than free people everywhere. The Brits want to be free. Apparently, according to some, that would be only the really stupid ones wanted to be free. The intelligent people didn't. But I doubt that's true. Doubt that's true. All right, let's go ahead and go to the phones. Our number is 580-KIDO. Craig, thanks for joining us. Go ahead, please.
Good morning, Dave. I think a lot of people are missing the bigger picture here, and this is basically a response to the change of civilizations. In the past, people would have gone and basically picked up their, you know, spears and shields and basically chopped each other up until one side left or the other side, you know, was victorious. Basically, excuse me, what this was saying is the new weapon, politics, and all the power and subversion that can come with that, with control, you know, at least from the organized academic mind and the new world, that not the new world order, but the way things are ordered, the way things are now managed nowadays by everybody who has that control, they were rejected, and they don't take no for an answer. They don't like it. They're rallying comebacks. They're, oh, we don't want that. Oh, well, London said we didn't want it. We want to leave Britain. London's going to leave Britain? Really? So I think that really this is not, I mean, as much as it is a financial discussion, this is more about a discussion of the plight of civilization and in which direction that's going to go, and the awareness that this, that Britain has basically provided to the world was, we do not want to be told by others who have nothing to do with our culture and our country and our sovereignty what to do.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Nope, I totally agree. I think that that's a huge part, and that's why I think, even though they case it as an economic discussion and how stupid it is for Britain to do this, is the narrative, it does not fit the narrative that they're leaving.
Right.
So we have got to talk about how this is the dumbest thing anybody's ever done, and it really couldn't have happened this way. This is just craziness, and because nobody smart would do this.
And when you say that, I think of idiots like John Kerry, and I'm not being grateful, that, you know, gracious to him, who come in and will say, oh, well, the people just were misinformed, or we just so know so much better, we have the information, and see the big mm-hmm. picture, and it's like, the big picture, you know, doesn't affect in a lot of ways the day-to-day suffering that people go through and the rules imposed on them. You can't carry a steak knife down the street in Britain coming home from the store hardly because so many people have, you know, you restrict guns, you restrict baseball bats, you know, whatever. They keep taking away more and more and oppressing people more and more. And finally, to the benefit of the British people, they got it. They said, nope, no more. We're done with you. Your
right.
ideas are wrong.
Trying to take it back.
Yep, exactly. So, anyway, thank you. Have a good 4th of July weekend. Enjoy.
You do the same. Happy 4th of July, Craig. Thanks for the call.
All right, bye-bye.
And our number is 580-KIDO. We need to take our final break. And when we come back, please do give us a call. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now.
Community Health Plans is an HMO PPO plan with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in Pacific Source Medicare depends on contract renewal.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Hey, if you have any comments or questions during the week, hey, shoot those over to us, PetsoFinancial.com. That's our website. And, articles, there's calculators there to help you with your financial planning if you'd like to use those as well as contacting us. So, and the podcasts, of course, those are up and going. We seem to have got everything all fixed and up and going, and so it's all good. So it should all be there. All right. Yeah, you know, Brexit is an interesting, I don't know. It does. As Craig said, there's really social issues here, too. So many of them, of course. We talked about that. But it's all put in this context of financial, and it's all put in the context of this is the end of the world. Yeah, it may cause some continued volatility, but one of the things that is amazing to me is when we look at Britain, the epicenter of this, and they are, they're the epicenter of this, right? I mean, this is about them. And their market did what? Went down a little bit. It's materially higher than it was right before the surprise vote. Right before it. And people can say, oh, it's just all they're trying, you know, it's just a bunch of patriotic buying and things like that. Is it? That's what would do it. Just some patriotic, I'll buy 100 shares of some stock would be enough to really move a large liquid market. I don't think so. And when we talk about it, or people talk a lot about it, it's not, Britain didn't do that much, because here's the reality, you know, it's their market isn't up that much when you translate it into U.S. dollars. So I've heard that commentary too. Okay, so what it is no matter what's happening, if the market's going up in anywhere, any kind of market, it's really a bad thing. It's only because of some, or we find some comparison. The fact of the matter is currencies move around all the time. All the time. And when and you do have to translate if you're a foreign investor. But to Britain, the pound going down in value or up in value has nothing to do with it. It's the same as us here with the dollar. We don't care about their currency relation to the yen when I go to the store. Neither do they. They don't care in their own currency if their market is up. And it is. It's up significantly. That's all they care. They don't then translate and say, well, we really lost money when you compare that to the Deutschmark or you compare it to the yen or you compare it to the dollar. It's up, period. Big moves. Do we calm down this coming week? Perhaps so. We'll see. Hey, I hope you enjoy the next hour.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of Money Matters. And I this is something that kind of is a blast from the past for me. I am going to spend the next hour here with Don Connolly. And that may not be a household word, but it, in our industry, it is. Don has been around the industry forever. I thought I was around for a long time. But you see, the thing about Don that he doesn't know this, but years ago, when I was trying to cut my teeth and I would drive all the way across the state to find somebody that might even actually talk to me, and so I was on the road every week. And in that those days, there was no satellite radio. I wouldn't have been able to afford it anyway. But once a month, we would get this tape. Yes, the old days, you know, cassette tapes, would show up in the mail. And on one side was Dr. Bob. He was this economist, and he would talk for like 30 minutes. And on the other side was Don Connolly. And I'd wear out every single month that issue. So you just plug it in, you'd turn it over, you'd plug it in and turn it over, because in parts of our state, of course, as you know, there's not even really much more than an AM radio that you could pick up on the drive. So years ago, this was a guy I'm listening to 30 years ago as I'm bumping along the roads, Highway 21 on my way to Sun Valley every week. So, Don, thanks for joining us. What, 40-plus years in the industry you've been?
Actually, I started in 1967. We're coming up on my 50th year.
Wow. That's crazy.
I don't look in mirrors anymore.
I got to say, I'm going to tell you this. I hope I look like you when I get that age, because I'm telling you, I don't even know what your age is. You probably started like I did when you were like 20 years old.
I am 70.
70. There you go, 20 years old.
Yep.
And so, you know, I understand. But I saw you last year when I was back in Boston for a visit. And actually, I think that was the first time I'd seen you in person. But you look great. You look great, and I know you're still
Thank
jetting
you.
Around the country like you were
yep.
still a teenager. So good for you. Good for you. All right, let's start with like 50 years ago, right? I mean, I don't know where this is going to go today. I just know you have vast experience, and I love the way you bring things down to bullet points for investors. So I want to kind of start with going back and where we are today. Why is it that as we live longer and longer lives, that we have shorter and shorter time frames as investors? And of course, every statistic shows that. Why do you think that is so true today?
Well, there's probably a lot of reasons, and I'm not a shrink, but one thing that comes to mind immediately is the amount of information we're getting.
Okay.
See, I think back to being in my career, in my lifetime, at one point, there were three networks.
Mm-hmm.
And the evening news was 15 minutes. There was no time to opine. People gave the news and got off.
Right.
That was it.
Right.
Now there are 200 million websites, I think 8,500 magazines and newspapers, and 300 or 400 TV stations.
Right.
All giving us information. So I think we're getting so much information, in a sense, we're losing our common sense.
Right, right.
And you remember Shakespeare accused Cassius of thinking too much.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's part of it. We get so much. The other thing, if I can just run with this for a minute.
Yeah, do.
There's a habit in life. There's a thing in life called anchoring. And I read an article, a woman wrote an article that I found very interesting. She had a great analogy. She said, look, if you go to a car dealership and you see a used car and it's for sale for $8,000, and you go back that afternoon, it's marked up to $10,000. You instinctively say that car's not worth $10,000. It's worth $8,000. On the other hand, if you'd gone to the dealership and the car was $12,000 and you talked the salesman down to $10,000, you'd say, I got a pretty good deal.
Mm-hmm.
In both cases, we're anchoring. We anchor on the $8,000, we anchor on the $12,000. Because the reality is, we're not car experts. We have no idea what the car is worth.
Right.
We've anchored on a price. That's a nasty habit in investing. When an investor gives a financial advisor some money, and I'm going to use an example, it could be $10,000, $50,000, let's just say $100,000 to make the math easy.
Mm-hmm.
Client gives a financial advisor $100,000. And it falls in value to $90,000. The immediate reaction is my investments are broken. But that's because we're anchored on the price, $100,000. If I were looking at a laptop in Best Buy, and it was $1,000, and I said, that's too much, I'm going to hang in. And I walk in one day, it's marked down to $900, and I buy it. I didn't buy it because I felt it was damaged. I felt I got a good deal.
Mm-hmm.
We have to learn with our investments that because the stock is cheaper than it was a year ago, it's not damaged. It's on sale. It's a better deal. It's the same company. IBM is IBM. General Motors is General Motors. What are you willing to pay for it? So the reason we get so skittish is the volatility drives us crazy because we're anchored on our original investment price. We should be anchoring on the value of the portfolio and say, hey, I've got a good deal now. This stuff's cheaper. That's the way we buy tuna fish. That's the way we buy clothes. We buy stuff on sale. You guys are in the only business in the world. You slash your prices, people run away.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you mark your prices up to all time. I throw money at you. So I think part of it's the amount of information causes us to anchor, and we get the wrong. We're focused on the wrong thing, which is the dollar amount, not the value of the investment. If that makes sense.
It makes a lot of sense. So let's play on this a little bit. You have a circumstance here where this, in my mind, one of the things I talk about is how this is the easiest, hardest game. There's nothing easier than looking back and saying, is this a high-quality corporation that's been in business longer than I've been on Earth, paying rising streams of income, rising streams of cash flow? This is not a hard thing to do, and for pennies, I can go buy that. I can buy a piece
Correct.
Of that business and watch my income grow decade after decade. Now, how hard is that to build wealth? That's the simplest thing in the planet, and it's available for $50 a month with most mutual fund companies out there. Now, we take that, and yet we see investor behavior in the simplest thing. So where is the disconnect between all this great information that comes out and we have all of this available? We have the Library of Congress walking around in our pocket, and we can't. And now we've turned into the world's worst investors in the easiest game in the world. How do we do that? How do we get through to people that says, stop it. Stop doing that.
You've got to paint a vision. You have to tell. It's called vision stories. You've got to make the reward. The investor has to understand the reward at the end is so great. Now, again, I'm a big believer. We don't invest to get rich. We invest so we don't get poor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's not your job to make people rich. It's your job to keep people from being poor.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, if you do this, you'll end up not poor. But in the meantime, there are going to be lots of obstacles in the way. Fees, commissions, volatility, bad markets, elections, terrorism, all these things. The vision has to be great enough that you can look over these obstacles in the way and focus on the vision. It's almost like you get, if you've ever been on a boat, but the captain will tell you, if you want to avoid seasickness, focus on the horizon. Don't focus on the water.
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know, so the point is that what's important is the destination, not the journey. We focus on the journey. It's up to you to constantly remind your clients why they invested in the first place.
Right, right. Right.
And you say you're long-term, and you want to be long-term, and you're going to be a good doobie, and all of a sudden you get up in the morning and look at the newspaper or watch the evening news or read the Internet, you go crazy because you're losing money. So when things are going down, there's a thing called recency bias in life, and again, I'm not a shrink, but recency bias is what's happened. If I asked you what you had for lunch every day for the past week, you could tell me what you had for lunch yesterday and maybe Wednesday, but beyond that, who knows, who cares? It's old history. Well, that's the way we approach life. And what's important today is far more important than the stuff in the past. Well, that's not true. To the people at the time, 9/11 was, to my mother's generation, the death of John Kennedy was the most egregious act in the history of the world.
Mm-hmm.
To her mother, it was Pearl Harbor. To the people in 1865, it was Abraham Lincoln's assassination. So everything is poignant at the time, but we tend to shunt it in the past and say only what's happening now is important. And that's called recency bias. So we've got to focus on not what's going on right now, because it will become everything we were worried about today won't matter in 10 years, believe me, because you couldn't tell me for $100 what you were worried about 10 years ago today.
But to your point, we probably were worried about a terrorist attack, and now we're not worried about that anywhere near call it ISIS or what oil's trading
Ebola
today.
I think two people in America died of Ebola. We focused on that for weeks. 23 million people have died of AIDS.
Yeah.
Two in the United States died of Ebola. But at the time, it was Crimea, Ukraine, Ebola. The press, I'm not demeaning the press, but they're trying to sell newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to sell ad time on TV. They're trying to sell their stories. And bad news sells. You know, small earthquake in Chile, nobody hurt. Well, no thanks. I'm not going to buy that.
Mm-hmm.
So their cliche is, if it bleeds, it leads.
Yeah.
I mean, I say to people all the time, once you become an investor, you're going to see words that scare you to death. You just once you invest, now you're really focused on the market, much more than before you weren't investing. So you read words that scare you to death. You'll read market soars 1,000 points, market plunges 900 points. Those are just words. And I asked them, Louie, how would you feel if you got in an elevator tomorrow morning? It didn't say up or down. It said soar or plunge. How would you feel about that? You'd get off the elevator. Well, all it means is up or down.
Mm-hmm.
But the press has a way of sensationalizing things. And now with evening news, 24 hours of news, there's a lot of time to put forth one's opinion. And all these talking heads have opinions. They all think they're smart. They aren't all smart.
Right.
They want us to think they're smart, and they put out their opinions. And I think it scares people. It stirs up emotions.
Mm-hmm. At the very least, it's very short-sighted, very short-term in nature.
Well, it's because this pressure, this pressure to be on the. People say recency bias. You say, well, the market's going down, it's going to continue down. Now, that may very well be true for the short term. It's not true for the long term. I mean, I don't know the exact numbers, so don't quote me on this, but the day I was born, the Dow was probably 100. The day I got to high school, it was probably 500. When I turned 60, it was 10,000. Here it is at 17,000. I mean, we know the trend is up, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when the market's going down and a client or an investor says, oh, my goodness, it's going to continue down, he or she is probably right for the short term. But the trend is up. The first securities issued in this country were Revolutionary War bonds. Commission's going to introduce in 1791, if you can believe that. The modern New York Stock Exchange was founded in 1851. Well, for the 250 years we've been going down, the market's always come back.
Mm-hmm.
It's always going to set new highs. We know that, yet so many people lose money. Why? Poor market timing decisions. So the way to avoid a poor market timing decision is not to market time. I tell people, when you invest money, you put those securities in the same drawer in your head as your mortgage. You're not going to price your house every day. You price your house every day, it's scary to death. Your house is worth zero on Christmas Eve. What's going to buy a house on Christmas Eve? It's worth nothing. And houses go up and down like crazy. The average stock on the New York Stock Exchange can fluctuate as much as 50% any given year.
Mm-hmm.
We can't focus. If our goal is long-term, we've got to ignore the short-term gyrations. It's very hard to do.
Right.
It takes the financial advisor reminding the client, takes discipline, takes focus. Stay focused on watch the horizon, watch the destination, not the journey.
Tough to do. Apparently tougher as we get, as we get more information at our fingertips,
well, our recovery
we ignore
time
history.
Is shorter. A 60-year-old doesn't have a lot of time to recover. If you're 25 years old and take a hit financially, you go, that hurt, but at least I'll get over it.
Right. But even a 60-year-old may have.
Think about it. If somebody's 45 years old,
mm-hmm.
and they get paid once a month, and they want to retire at age 65, that person's only got 240 paychecks left in his or her life. A 50-year-old has 180 paychecks left. That's not much.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, right now, as you and I are talking on the phone, doing this interview, 1 year of college is the cost of a good car, right?
Right.
In 180 months, a three-year-old is going to be in college. Time has a way of really slipping away.
Yeah.
And saving money is a habit, so you got to get in the habit early. But I think, to your point, the longer we go, the older we get, the shorter recovery time. Look, I live in Florida. I see too many retired guys bagging groceries at Publix. That's not the way it should be.
Right.
I've got a friend down here who was a policeman in New York City his entire career. He moved to Florida to retire, and the bank said, no job, no mortgage. You know, it's tough to pass those tests and then pass those financial tests.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So you got to start as early as you can. You got to stay invested, brave the short term, that involves risk. I mean, that's the way. We can't mitigate the risk out of the business. We can modify it a little bit. We can't. I mean, we can mitigate it. We can't eliminate it. There's risk in investing.
Right.
There's a far greater risk in not investing.
That's fair. But people do. They perceive the risk of price rather than the risk of the value, meaning, you know, companies are still generating massive cash flows and maybe even increasing dividends in the face of declining stock prices. But people don't see that.
Yeah, I grew up, I mean, dividends are living proof that good companies don't use smoke and mirrors.
Right.
We've gotten, the yield used to be much higher. Now the yield in the S&P is probably less than 2%. Companies have gotten away from paying dividends, keeping the cash themselves. Dividends are wonderful. You can find getting a dividend, a good dividend, a good company is like getting paid while you wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody owes it to themselves to look at good, high-quality dividend-paying stocks.
Yeah, and because of that, they have a proven history. It's not like you're taking a wild flyer on a brand new IPO.
No.
Well,
no, it's not a lottery ticket. It's a fractional share of ownership.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. All right. Don, we're going to take a quick break here, and when we come back, let's talk about if you will, some of the history here where, you know, basically we went from the day you only ate what you killed, meaning you got commissions, to fees, and is this a better environment now? And we'll talk to Don about that here in a moment. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5.
Significant act. Activate the FM chip in your cell phone.
Turn it on.
Visit freeradioonmyphone.org.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello and welcome back to Money Matters. I'm Dave Petzo. This is a special recording. And as I mentioned before, I'm here today with Don Connolly, who... Has Don Connolly 24/7 is his company, and he's now been in the business for approaching 50 years, and still zipping around the country. Before our talk today, he just came in from San Diego, so he's still running around the country, helping coach and push some really careful and thoughtful ideas to advisors and their clients. And I think it's just one of those things that over the years you develop an ability, he certainly has, of keeping things simple. And that's really, I think, in so much of our industry, we've gotten away from that and taking these complex things and talking about Sharpe ratios and P.E. ratios and all these nonsensical things that just make people's eyes gloss over. Don, thanks again for joining us. I appreciate you, and appreciate you just keeping the good fight going.
Absolutely, Dave. My pleasure.
We were touching on investor behavior, and I'm going to come back to that as well. But it's also this idea of a self-help world. I mean, kind of tying that together. We're now talking about everything is all about price, right? It's like, you know, we can buy this index fund over here, and you can't beat the index, and you shouldn't hire advisors, and you can get a robo advisor for like, you know, 25 or 50 basis points. Why would you hire like a real human being? And I thought, you know, this is really quite a difference in the way things have been transacted in a very short period of time. And I just wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, we can probably blame it on Walmart, right?
Yeah.
The average person in America used to buy 20-some pieces of apparel a year. Now it's up in the 80s. Why shouldn't I buy three blouses? They're only $10.
Right.
So I think certain stores would like us to believe that you can, for $10, you can get the same jeans you wore as a kid with all that quality. That's simply not true. Quality's diminished. But nonetheless, call it the Walmart mentality, where everything is price, 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 price. A robo-advisor is a computer program that can buy stock and overheads cut down so we can sell it cheaper. We can charge less for it. Let's talk about, so robo-advisors can do a lot. They're good. They're smart. They buy. It's a good program. But let me tell you what a robo-advisor can't do. A robo-advisor can't hold a widow's hand. That's what a robo-advisor can't do. This is a relationship business. No one has ever bought anything in the history of the world because it's the cheapest price, ever anything. I don't care what it is. The reason they pay the cheapest price, they elect to pay the cheapest price, is because they don't see the value the competition's offering.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens, if our business has become commoditized. All big businesses get commoditized. When a business gets commoditized, that's when the paperboy thinks he can do your job. Everybody can do the job. Everybody can buy stock. Well, it's not true. But nonetheless, margins get very thin, prices start to fall, technology invites in competition, all of a sudden there's a race to the bottom to give the stuff away. I think commissions and fees are a commodity, and commodities seek their own level. Maybe 5% is too high, 25 basis points is too low. Somewhere in the middle should be a normal fee or a commission. But generally speaking, as Seth Godin says, people who race to the bottom don't have a good story or good products. That's why they're selling it so cheaply. You don't get quality. I deal with a lot of financial advisors that feel I've got to discount my fees. I can't charge my clients full fees. These are the same people that wait in line at restaurants, good restaurants.
Mm-hmm.
They have iPhones, not $30 throwaways. They don't buy a cup of coffee. They go to Starbucks. Why? Because they perceive consistency and value. Starbucks is very competent and very consistent. They've revolutionized the experience of buying a cup of coffee. Apple is very consistent and very competent. If a financial advisor wants to compete with robo-advisors, he or she has to be very consistent and competent.
Mm-hmm.
People don't pay just price alone. They pay for value. And if the value is missing, go for it. Get a robo-advisor. That's what I do. But I can tell you, I won't do it on the phone because it'll bore people to death, but I can tell you 50 things, literally, actually 80 things, because I've made a list, that 80 things a financial advisor can do for clients. And it's not a question of dumping the money into a program and charging 25 basis points. There's much more to it than that. That's without a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And these companies are great. TD Ameritrade is a great company. Fidelity, E-Trade, these are great organizations if you don't want service. Not conventional service. I'm sorry, if you don't want a relationship,
mm-hmm.
the human element. But I'm telling you now, decisions to invest are emotional. It's never objective. Financial advisors, people at Fidelity, E-Trade, these are very objective people. They deal with numbers all day long. And the language of objective thinking is numbers. But decisions are emotional. They're not objective. And to make an emotional decision, in my opinion, you need to be in a relationship with somebody very competent. Doctors make tons of mistakes. We don't trust the insurance industry. None of us do. We don't trust the healthcare industry. We don't trust the U.S. government. We all trust our doctors. When you ask them, well, why? Well, I think my doctor's trying his best. You ask people, what makes you think your doctor's trying his best? The answer is always the same answer, face-to-face meetings.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to go through life without face-to-face meetings, and I have grandsons, maybe they'll do it. Have at it. Get a robo-advisor. Sit at home with your laptop, have a cup of coffee, and go online. If you want a relationship and a face-to-face meeting, you've got to deal with a competent financial advisor, who charges, by the way, a very modest fee. These fees are not much.
It's not
what you get.
Yeah, that's true.
The question of, do you want to stand in line? Look, Rolex is not a watch. Rolex is a luxury item. If you want a watch, Seiko makes a great watch. Rolex is a luxury item. I'm not sure Porsche is a car. You know, Bentley's a car. Kia is a car. But if we all bought for price, we'd all be driving used Hyundais, right?
It's true.
We'd all be wearing Salvation Army clothes. That's not the way we function as a nation.
It's true. We'd never go to dinner.
No.
It's cheaper to
open
a can
of soup. We do it because we don't see the value. When you go to a good restaurant in Sun Valley and you wait in line 15 minutes, you go, well, it's worth it. Yeah, it's expensive, but it's great service. And people don't go to a five-star restaurant just for the food. They go there for the experience.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you're going to get a financial advisor, you've got to get one who makes every visit to his or her office a five-star experience.
That's a great point.
I wouldn't pay a financial advisor full commission just to execute a trade. Why do that, a full fee? I want more than that for my money. I want you there when you have nothing to sell. I want the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
I want my doctor available by phone. I want to be able to make an appointment to go see my doctor. I think next to the family doctor, the financial advisor is the most important person that family is ever going to meet. So why would you do it online?
Mm-hmm. Well, especially when the big decisions in life come, right? I mean,
day
to day, you don't need that. You don't need that.
No.
But when the market's...
But, we all spend a day trying to go through a day in America, not buy something made in China. And it falls apart. We say, well, it's made in China. Well, we don't have to have that mentality. We don't have to accept poor quality.
Mm-hmm.
We have the right to demand quality. You may pay more than one, but it's better quality.
Great. Great point.
That's a relationship versus robo-advisors are great. Robo-advisors can buy stock. They're computers. They're smart. If all you want is the investments, get a robo-advisor. If you want a relationship, someone to talk to, someone to hold your hand and walk you through the minefield, you need an advisor.
Mm-hmm. You know, in some ways, I think the whole idea of the robo-advisor is going to make this industry better. I think it's going to force the lower end to get better, because the robo-advisor can certainly service that. And the higher quality firms that really are there, and they're there in a quality way with quality investments, reasonably priced, all those things, they're going to shine, it seems to me. I just so anyway.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I'll tell you a quick story. I had cataract surgery a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
Take the lens out, put a new lens in. There are different kinds of lenses you can buy. I bought the lenses that are adjustable, so I can see. I've worn glasses for 50 years. I no longer wear glasses. I'm 20/20 reading and far away.
Hmm.
Very expensive lenses, but I got them because it was worth it to me not to sit on my glasses for the 3,000th time. So the cost, it took 4.5 minutes on one eye, and you wait, and as time elapses, you go in for a test, everything's fine. Do the other eye, that was 4 minutes. So it's 8.5 minutes of laser surgery. And I said to the doctor, kidding, but I wasn't kidding, I said, doctor, $12,000 was the cost. I said, that's a lot of money for 8.5 minutes. He said, Don, I'm not paid by the minute. It was a great answer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm paid for knowing what I'm doing. You pay for the procedure.
Mm-hmm.
He said, next time, do it yourself. You get a discount doctor for your eyesight.
It's a great point.
So he's right. He's not paid by the minute.
No.
Financial advisor is not paid to pick a mutual fund. He or she's paid for the years and years of training and sacrifice and dedication it took to get to know which mutual fund to pick.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. Great point. All right. Let's go ahead and take a quick break here. And when we come back, much, much more with Don Connolly. Stay tuned.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call
Decide.
This is Money Matters with Dave Pezzo on Idaho's talk station, 580 KITO.
Hello and welcome back to Money Matters. Again, a special recording here with Don Connolly, who is a legend in our industry. Been around for 50 years in the industry, still traveling back and forth across the country all the time, talking to advisors and investors, and we are privileged to have him here today. I really appreciate it, Don. Thanks again for spending time.
Thank you, David.
Let's touch on, in the last segment we talked about, investors, and that's what we're going to keep talking about, though, because to me, I also want to circle back here and talk about the investor behavior. You give a great analogy here to how investors can misperceive things just because of price movement. And I remember it's like a deck of cards, or not a deck of cards, but you have 10 cards. Five red, five black. Why don't you tell us that story and how people react? Because I think that's just such a classic. If it's going down, I want to sell. And it makes no sense, no logic. It's a complete disconnect.
Yeah, the analogy was, I'll try to remember. I mean, I will remember it, but I'm trying to get the fine points down. We have 10 playing cards, five are red, five are black. We put them all face down. And I'll say, bet a dollar, and, they're all mixed up, but they're face down.
Mm-hmm.
Would you pay me a dollar to pick a card? What are the odds of picking a black card? And the odds are 50-50, right? They're five red, five black.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, right, now pick a card, and bang, you pick a red card. Now, you were wrong. You've lost your dollar. Do you want to bet another dollar? Okay, now what are your odds? And the odds are better you'll pick a black card, right?
Yeah.
Because there are more of them.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, if we pick three red cards in a row, now the odds are huge we're going to pick a black card. We say, that's it, I quit. I'm not going to. I say, what, about $100 on a black card? $500? No, I'm losing. I'm quitting.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do with investing. Every time the market goes down and we start to lose money, the more it happens, the better the chance of the market turning around. But at some point, we get to the point where we're almost like bluffed. I'm getting out.
Right.
The fact is, every time you pick a red card, the odds are picking a black card or greater. If you could pick five red cards in a row, it happens, right? Now your odds are 100%. You're going to pick a black card.
Right.
Question is, do you have what it takes to stand there and take that heat through five red cards?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because every time the market's gone down in the last 250 years, as I said earlier, it's come back.
Mm-hmm.
Every single time. It's never failed to come back. If it doesn't come back, this will be the first time ever. And every time it's come back, it's set an eventual new high.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have the time? That's why the older you get, the shorter your fuse gets. You get, wow, I may not bounce back here. I'm 65, 70 years old. This is freaky.
Mm-hmm.
25, you go, no big deal. Because at 25, you have no money. That's the problem.
That is the problem, right? Isn't it? Yeah.
It's a black card, red card thing. The more we lose, the faster we want to run to the sidelines. I want to get out till things get better. The biggest investment mistake in the world is not investing at all. I mean, it's not starting. That's the biggest mistake. But the second biggest mistake is not going all the way. I see it all the time. Mm. You get out with the intention of getting back in later when things calm down. You never get back in. You start overthinking. It's really, really hard to get out and get back in.
Super
so
hard.
The trick is to stay in. I heard Peter Lynch is the mythical, godlike money manager in our business. He ran the Magellan Fund for years. Brilliant guy.
Mm-hmm.
He had the best track record ever amassed. He said, you know, no one's ever owned a track record.
Yeah.
They don't stay in the beginning. But
yeah.
He made the point on a radio show that I raised, if I buy a stock for the Magellan Fund, the stock goes down, I buy more, unless I've changed my fundamental analysis. There are two types of analysis, fundamental and technical. Fundamental being the numbers, the base, the hardcore, what's beneath this company.
Mm-hmm.
So if I change my fundamental analysis, the stock's in, I'll sell it. So either get out or you buy more. If I haven't changed my analysis, I buy more because it's a way to add more cheaply. So I think, to paraphrase Warren Buffett, if you're going to be a net buyer of stocks all your life, you should welcome price declines as a way to add to your portfolio at cheaper prices.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the most money made in the market is short term. Commodities, day trading, those are the biggest gains you can make. It's also the biggest risk, David,
right.
The biggest loss.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you now, mom and dad can't sit in Bangor, Maine, or Sun Valley, Idaho, and outthink the guys on Wall Street and the gals on Wall Street. It doesn't work that way.
Right.
So if you want a day trade and you want a short term, it's really, really risky. You'll make big gains if you're right, you know, for the amount of time you expend, but you'll lose a lot too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's an awfully hard thing. You know, Peter, picking up on what you said about Peter Lynch, he also said something amazing when he was asked about when he left. And this, again, back to investor behavior. You must be so proud of the amount of money you've made for all of your clients during your time. And he said, not at all. I'm extremely disappointed because the net investor actually didn't make money with our fund. They lost a little bit.
Yeah, no one's ever owned a track record. That's right.
Yeah, they just don't hang in there. They were buying. Well, how was that? Because they were buying and selling at all the wrong times. And people repeat that behavior over and over again. I think Einstein.
For sure. It's an emotional roller coaster.
Right.
Investing's an emotional roller coaster.
It is. It is.
And no one's emotions get tested as much as when they're losing money.
Right, right, right.
They feel they're losing money short term.
Well, they feel they are. There's still the cash flows and all those things in those companies. And even if you're – anyway, the point is that even in the greatest mutual fund record – and, you know, you can argue others have had longer records, but his was phenomenal. How you don't make money in that environment is inconceivable. The people couldn't try to be that bad.
Yeah, well, you run. You run for the sidelines. The assumption you're going to get back in later, which you never do.
Right on. All right, so let's take our final break here, and when we come back, we're going to have a nice long segment left. And, again, this is a special recording with Don Connolly, and you're listening to Money Matters. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave has taken from all of us here at Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo on Idaho's Talk Station, 580 KIDO.
Hello and welcome back to Money Matters. Again, this is a special recording with Don Connolly, and I just have to tell you again, it's an honor, it's a privilege. Whenever somebody is in the industry for a long, long time, and they're teaching in that industry, and that's what Don Connolly is a teacher, you gain a certain wisdom. You gain an ability to take complex subjects and make them into something that average people can understand. And like all industries, our industry has a huge, overwhelming, stupid vocabulary designed solely to make sure the average person has no idea what the heck's going on. And Don has made a career of tearing that apart. And I go all the way back to my early days, 30, 35 years ago, when I wore out the tapes with he and Dr. Bob driving around just trying to find a human being that was willing to give me time. And so I appreciate that from my background, Don. You helped a young guy survive in the early phases of a difficult industry, for sure.
Thanks.
Thank you. Now, on to, I can't quite get away from investor behavior, but I want to shift a little bit here. And let's talk about, you know, in our industry years ago, the end of regulated commissions was the end of our industry. The advent of fee only was going to be the end of all of the brokerage houses. And now the computer-driven discount brokers were going to wipe everybody out. And now we've got robos. Now, I'm just kind of curious from your perspective, what do you think the outlook of the industry is over the next 20 and 50 years?
I think it's robust. People always need advice.
Yeah.
And as long as people need advice, we'll be fine. We'll be fine as an industry. You know, and people don't normally do things for themselves that are beyond their comprehension. Investing is very, very complex.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not something you want to try on your own. You know, do not do this at home kind of thing.
Right.
So I think it's fine. I mean, you know, we've changed. We've changed from high commissions to low commissions. We've changed from low commissions now to fees. You know, delivery is different, but the advice is there. So the question is, do you want advice? And the answer is, yeah. Like, I got a friend who's a retina surgeon. He got up in the middle of the night recently. A patient was on Medicaid. And he went to the emergency room and reattached a retina and got $65 net, after all expenses were paid.
Hmm.
I have a friend who's a colorectal surgeon. He does appendicitis stuff for $200.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, things change. Life changes.
Yeah.
But In the Midwest, the price of wheat is the same as it was 30 years ago, probably. But technology has allowed us to reap, to harvest more.
Right.
It changes. But the bottom line is that I think if we focus on the things that change, it's going to change our map. Because there's so much change, politically, socially, economically, in our business. We have to focus on the things that don't change. And the two things never change. One is every client has goals. And generally, they're pretty simple goals. I want to educate my kids, pay the minimal amount of taxes I'm due, I have to pay, and retire comfortably. That never changes. And the other thing that never changes, every financial advisor has to make a living. That's a pretty good deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty good pact, the two of them, the client and the advisor. So I advise every advisor to go in the morning and focus on your client's goals. Everything else is white noise.
Right.
The election, Hillary, Donald, ISIS, terrorism, it's white noise.
Right.
We've got to get through life because we don't take care of ourselves. No one's going to take care of us. Everyone listening to this radio program, everyone knows somebody who's living on family, friends, or charity.
Right.
Nobody listening wants to move in with their kids when they're 75 years old. Nobody. And I talk to people. I live in Florida. I talk to people that are retired comfortably. I say, what's the biggest single pot? It's never 401K. It's never Social Security. It's always my personal savings.
Hmm.
So Social Security will get you by. The 401k will get you by to a point, but you don't want to lose your dignity, so you got to take care of yourself. Now, maybe I'm speaking like an old guy. It's generational, maybe, but I don't want to go through life depending on somebody else, and I'm not sure your listeners do either.
I hope
so
you're
we
not
need advice.
Speaking generational.
We need advice.
Yeah.
And we'll pay for advice if it's good advice, not cheap advice. The fastest growing industry in America is cheap advice.
Hmm.
You can go on WebMD and cure yourself. I don't suggest you do that.
Yes, it's a good empowerment tool, but it is certainly, I would hope, is not the end-all, be-all for most people.
No, my sister-in-law got breast cancer. She went on the Internet for a long time, but that's information. It's not knowledge.
Right.
It's not wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
It's information.
Right.
All the information's out there. But, you know, the information was out there, David, during the tech bubble problem several years ago.
Yep.
The information was all there. People still got blown up because they don't know what to do with the information.
Right.
And that's the advisor's role, to take that information and put it in a mill and grind out wisdom.
Mm-hmm. So are we, as an industry, Don, are we getting better? Are we getting better? Or is it the same old? A few really great advisors and a mass of not so good.
Well, I think it's getting better. But I can tell you, as I enter my 50th year this fall, investors make the same mistakes today, David, they made when I started 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's always the same mistakes. So, and I think advisors do too. So, yeah, we're getting better. We're getting more refined. But But it, you know, it's a constant struggle, right?
Mm-hmm.
I've been told every generation for years is going to save more than the last. Let me rephrase this. Every generation thinks it's smarter than the generation that came before it, mm-hmm. and wiser than the generation that's coming after it.
Right.
So every generation I've been hearing since I was 21 years old, this generation is going to save money. Well, you know what? It's never happened yet. Savings rates are no more than they were 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to raise kids. We don't buy sneakers. We buy Reeboks and Adidas and Nike. We buy name brand this, name brand that. That stuff adds up. 1 year of college is the cost of a good car. It's hard to save money.
Mm-hmm.
And people care more in a lot of cases. A lot of people I know care more about what they're driving and what they're wearing than about their retirement because they can't see down the road. It's called temporal myopia. I can't see far ahead. If we could see down the road, nobody'd smoke, nobody'd drink, right?
Right.
But we can't see down the road. So we're getting better, you and I, in the industry with those folks who want help. But we can't go out there and force feed this stuff. Hopefully more and more people are turning to professional help. Because, yeah, what we do is a lot better than what it used to be, much more sophisticated.
Right.
We just got to get the people. If that all makes sense, what I'm trying to say, getting people coming to us.
Yeah.
So what we do, yes, much, much better. Our ability to affect people, I don't know.
Yeah.
People are determined to drive that new car and take that vacation and live in that new house. They don't want to, you know, to save money, you have to sacrifice. Yeah. Not a lot of, you know, you give a young child a cookie. Say, don't eat that. I'll give you another one in 20 minutes. Well, gone.
Yeah, I like those studies. They're very, very strong human nature right from children.
Yeah, well, they're investor studies. It's the same thing.
Mm-hmm. So how do we change that? How do we do that?
Now for a reward you simply cannot visualize. That's a tough challenge.
Yeah. So how do you stop people from stopping the game, though, right? I mean, you've said that several times today and always.
Bottom line, you could do everything for your clients except make decisions. You can't do that. You can't decide for them.
Right.
So I try to appeal to their common sense, the reason. But I can't make the decision.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. If you get out of two colleges and one's $10,000 and one's $40,000 a year, what are you going to do? You can't. If someone's going to decide which college they want to go to. It's their decision, right?
Right. Right. Well, if they can pay the bill,
decide,
it is.
We can do everything but decide. And people have to suck it up and make decisions. One of these is take care of yourself. I'll tell you, because if you don't take care of yourself, I say it before, nobody else is going to take care of you. When you're 65, the milkman doesn't care what your problems are.
Mm-hmm.
Bank wants their check for the mortgage, whatever it is. It's no mercy.
It's true. That is true.
So take care of yourself is the number one rule. And do it with an advisor, someone who's experienced at this. You know, I'll tell you one more thing.
Yep.
People say to me, I'm going to set up a retirement plan. I say, well, let me ask you a question. When's the last time in your life you did something for the first time and got it right? Mm. And that answer is never, right?
Right.
I say, you're about to retire for the first time. And you don't get it right, you're hawking your future.
Yeah.
You better get an advisor who's retired 200 times so you can retire once.
It's great analogy. Yep. Absolutely. All right, on a final thought here, any other thoughts, Don? How do we do this? I mean, what do you kind of keep in front when people ask you? How do I stay in when the market's down 50%? How am I supposed to make that decision when,
you know,
maybe I am
retired?
It all
boils down to one simple word, David, and that word is trust. Do you trust your advisor?
Yeah.
Can you hold your advisor's hand and jump? Can you do that? Because I think for most part, clients don't want information. They want someone they can trust. So the advisor has to earn the trust, and the client has to invest his or her trust in that advisor. And once the trust is there, you just close your eyes and go for it. It's no different. When we have surgery, we don't give ourselves a medical degree. We trust the doctor.
Right.
And it's the same thing. The most important ingredient in our business is trust. And it's just, trust me, it's going to work out.
It's good.
And trust is not casual. Trust is irrational. You know, a mother walking down the street, Sun Valley, Idaho, with a newborn child or an infant who has to tie her shoes, not going to hand that baby to a stranger. But
right.
She hand the baby to a fireman. Why? Well, I trust firemen. Why? I don't know. I just trust firemen. It's irrational. It's nonlinear.
Yeah, that's true.
But the advisor has to earn that trust. And that's how you help people best, by earning their trust. And